Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and chip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruption. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on the court from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Hello, and welcome to Provocative Thought, intimately known as PT, striving to awaken those who are asleep, stimulate those who are awakened, feed those who are starving, and nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steed, a self proclaimed student of life in the search, discovery, and revelation of life on life's terms. First, I'd like to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the creator for allowing me to be. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-95 4-0. Please press the number 1 to speak. You can contact the show by dialing 516-531-9540. Please press the number 1 to speak. You can reach us on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search, type in We Talk Productions, and listen to the show live. You can also contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic, how come you hate me? It's 2021, And some white folks can't let go of their hate and or fear of black people. It makes you wonder where it all came from. I'm going to take a shot at exploring this phenomenon. Feel free to join in. Hate is an intense feeling or dislike for someone. Fear is an unpleasant emotion caused by the belief that someone or something is dangerous, likely to cause pain or a threat. Greed is an intense and selfish desire for something, especially wealth, power, or food. Mercenaries who had allowed greed to take over their principles, right? I wanted to define those three words because I think they are very connected to this whole hate, fear, black people like type thing. It really doesn't, we're just going to talk about it. It's a talk show. We're here to talk. Apparently, what is good for black people has always been perceived as being bad for white people in America. We can logically conclude that no one would force anyone they loved into slavery. Hating them would make that easier to do. Devaluing the life of a people facilitates and validates the subhuman status placed upon these peoples, at least in the warped minds of some and in the psychotic socialization or rearing of others. Forcing someone into the horrors of slavery would facilitate fear of losing the wealth generated by slavery and the fear of losing one's life to the rebellious slave. How dare they rebel against being forced into labor and a lot of other stuff. Slave insurrection and self-preservation are both one and the same, and a threat to the institution of slavery and white supremacy, ordaining the act of so much as looking a white man in the eye as an egregious act of defiance. Ultimately, the slaughtering of the white enslavers facilitates fear and hate of the slaves. No one loves the person or people who takes or threatens their life, the life of their loved ones, and livelihood, be it an offensive or defensive act. Violence begets more violence, more hatred, and more fear. From Wikipedia, they said numerous black slave rebellions and insurrections took place in North America during the 17th, 18th, and 19th century. There is documentary evidence of more than 250 uprisings or attempted uprisings involving 10 or more slaves. That's not including individuals or smaller groups of revolutionary freedom fighters. Blacks were fighting for freedom and against injustice then, and they are fighting for freedom and injustice now. Greed facilitates and perpetuates the inhumane ideology an institution of chattel slavery or slavery for as long as it creates wealth and slave masters benefit from it. The hate, fear, and greed apparently last forever. And so here we are, black people still being subjected to injustices and inhumane acts. They remain hated, feared, and despised regardless of the enormous contribution they have made in America from a position of great disadvantage. The list of black American inventions we benefit from today merits a show on its own. We have a call, and let's see if this is an error or they want to talk. Hello? Welcome to Provocative Thought.
What's up, Carl?
What's up, brother?
Yeah,
Brother Mark?
Listening to you. Yeah, this is Brother Mark. Yeah, I was just sitting there listening, and everything you saying, you know, it basically dates back to slavery, because that was part of the institution to keep us in that type of slave mentality. And you know, I was doing some research when they freed the slave, and then they came up with the Emancipation Proclamation of freeing the slaves, with institutions involved in it, so they really wasn't free. And when you really look at the 13th Amendment, it talked about with the exception of criminals. And if you look at United States and look at how many, they said, I think it's 5% of the population and 25% are incarcerated, which is people of color. So when you really take, look at the institution like that, it was designed, you know what I mean, to keep us still as slaves, but do it in the sense of legally, you know, depending on the 13th Amendment, which never freed the slaves. You know, and, you know, some people don't know that. I didn't know it until I, you know, looked it up myself. So it's so many institutions, even with the Jim Crow laws, you know, it's the same thing. And when, you know, when I look at the George Floyd situation, this has been going on for years, for centuries, all the way back to the lynching, you know, where the Ku Klux Klan was born in after the Civil War, and put them in place to maintain us and keep us in an institution of, you know, the separation and degradation and the whole nine yards to keep us, you know, let them know that they're still the masters and we're still the slaves. And we have to stop looking at one another and shooting and killing one another, because they're actually doing with the same institutions that they laid down for us. They're having a design to fall back on us. So, you know, it's good to hear people that have some type of information and talk like this to assure the people that this is not no accident that's happening with George Floyd, because mostly every incident, a black man is being killed over something as small as a ticket, a light being out on the back of his car. When I had seen situations that where white people were stopped, they never even pulled the guns out. Mm. I had an incident myself where they pulled me over. But, you know, and I didn't even know. They said, well, they said my back light was out. But when I had it tested later on, my back light was never out. My brake light wasn't out. They pulled me over because they seen a black man driving with tinted windows, and they wanted to, you know, harass me. And they had guns in my face. If you pulling me over for a back light out, why would you pull guns out on me if you just pulling me over for a back light out?
Hmm.
You know,
well,
so,
we call that fear. Right? That's fear.
Definitely. Yeah. And this is how a lot of them think today, you know, and it's deep, because I was looking at a situation they called it. It was a movie they put out. It came out in 1900, like 19, 21, 22. It's called The Birth of a Nation, where they was portraying black men as these monstrous people, and they were out to rape the black white women, and they was killers and, you know, as savages and stuff, and that was one of the biggest motion pictures they put out then. So if you really look at that institution, even with the white supremacists in the churches, a lot of people are still, and I don't want to say this to touch on anybody, step on anybody's toes, because I'm a Christian myself, but I don't believe in no white man on the cross. And I'm not getting into religion, but I'm just looking at how the institutions is, right? If you go all the way back to ancient Rome and you know, the Egyptians, Jesus was born in the Middle East. And anybody that had common sense, he would not have blue eyes and blonde hair. Over there, they're darker. And if you really look at the system that Egypt, all over there in the Middle East, Jerusalem, Bethlehem, all those people, those are African countries. So how Jesus would end up being white? So that's another institution. And a lot of churches today, they are still practicing white supremacists because they're taking their little kids that don't know anything about what's going on and putting this image in their head that they're that Jesus is white. And then when the kid look at this white man on the cross and say, oh, that's God, that's Jesus' son, how do you think that make them feel? They look at their skin and say, oh, well, God, he's white, Jesus is white. And that makes another term of white supremacists. They're practicing that today because some blacks don't even understand the fact that this picture of Jesus was put in our mind because of the institution of slavery. They came up with this white man to compensate slavery for all the stuff they did to the black race. So now they're going to beat you for 400 years. The same white man reads you the Bible, but then at the same time, they're going to make the oppressor become your savior. How the oppressor going to become your savior? I seen them take this little boy. I forgot his name, but they gave him the electric chair. He was the youngest black child in America that got the electric chair for raping and killing two white women. But later on, they found out that he didn't even do it. They stuck a Bible up under his seat because he was too little for his head to go on a electric chair. They stuffed a Bible up under his seat, lifted him up, and killed him. So we got to be careful when we get into this religion stuff because a lot of that stuff are being taught in churches, white supremacists. How you going to read the Bible and kill somebody in the name of God and say that this is your savior? Ku Klux Klan burned crosses. So a lot of people got to really understand, you know, like you said, you find the God of your understanding, and he's not of color, he's just a spirit. But this white supremacist, there's so many institutions caught in, it's pathetic, man. You know, especially in the churches today. I went in a black church and I seen this white man up on the wall. I walked out of there. I said, they don't know by now. Here in the 20th century, and they're still pushing. See, they didn't brainwash enough of us blacks to continue to promote white supremacy in the churches. And now we got the image that God is white. That's because to make us feel inferior to them. And I thank God that I know better today.
Okay, let me ask you a question. So if this is theoretically, say if you are supreme, if you belong to the supreme, if you are a supreme being, so with great power, right, of being a supreme being, does great responsibility come with having great power, or am I crazy or something? Shouldn't you be the one that's uplifting everybody if you have great power? The weak, the strong supposed to protect the weak. I don't, what's wrong with this picture? What's with all the hate? You hate so much that you're willing to kill the wrong black guy, right? Kid, right? You're willing to kill the wrong guy. You don't care. Just give me one of them and let's fry him, right? Let's kill him. So what is it, right, that these people hate so much that they don't even care if they get the right person in a crime, if a crime was even committed? Because I don't even know if those people were raped or not. It's from back in them times, we don't know. Somebody could just say something and you could die for it. It didn't even have to happen. So how come there's so much hate? Why do you hate somebody that you are basically kidnapping, torturing, raping, murdering? You understand what I'm saying? And then that's the person you hate. So, I mean, well, nobody asked to be a slave.
Right.
Why do they do that? Why do you think they do that? Why do they hate so much?
They do that because when you kill people, and what they did to black people, stole their religion, turned them inside out, took their culture. They don't want them to do what they done to us. So they had this hatred towards themselves, and they switch it around and use it on us to make themselves feel comfortable. It's almost like trick psychology. They blame you for the things that they did to you. In other words, they they'll do wrong, but then they'll turn around and say, I didn't do it. This person did it. So that's where that fear and that hatred come from, because if they didn't do that, then it would make them feel inferior of themselves, which they are inferior of themselves. So they need somebody to use it on to say, well, this is why we did this. This is why we did it, because they're killers. Like I just said, 90% of the population, Americans, are black and they're in jail. You know what I mean? So the excuse is that they go to jail for petty crimes, but they say they're criminals. So this is where a lot of the politicians and stuff, they make their money. It's still slavery, institutional slavery. But the hatred comes from the stuff that they did to us, and they switching around, and they have an inferiority complex. So their hatred is the hatred for themselves, and they use it on us. It's like you can be stopped for a traffic ticket and lose your life, and the first thing they'll say is they fear for their life. No, we should be the ones fearing for our lives. And it's sad because this has been going on for years. And the question, really, and I hope somebody on here white that's listening, because you got to ask yourself that they should be asking their own people, why are they doing this to other races of people? What have we done to them? Who have been the most violent people to blacks? It's white people. They've been more violent. It's like if you say something about them, like I'm talking now, the first thing they say, I hear violence. It's not violence. You're hearing the truth. The truth will override hatred. The truth will override anything that's wrong. So they need to sit down and have a conversation with their own race of people, and their answer is, why do you hate? Not just black, hate people, anybody, because it's not just black. It's any color, Chinese, Vietnamese, anybody that's not a white supremacist, they hate them. And they come out and tell you that.
Were Chinese ever enslaved in America?
Well, to a certain degree, they put them in concentration camps. I think in World War One, right? World War Two, when they lined up all the Japanese. My grandfather told me, and put them in concentration camps, and they couldn't move around or do anything. After they dropped that bomb on them, Hiroshima. They lined up all the ones that lived here and put them in Kazimaru City, put them as slaves. They couldn't do anything under their jurisdiction. But this hate thing is deeper than what they appearing it to be. It just go always back to inferiority complex, because if you look at the history of the black nations, we were the richest people on earth. We the richest continents in the world. With the Africans, and they went over there and they robbed and they took everything, and now they kind of hide all of, because black history just don't start with Malcolm X, don't start with Martin Luther King. Black history go all the way back to the days when they first arrived on the shores of Africa, and all the stuff they did to the Africans, and they didn't like. See, they don't tell the real. See, they teach us American history. But I talked to some Africans. They went over there with that colonial stuff, and I think with the Portuguese, and they went over there and murdered them, took their land, and hated them just because they were wealthy. So this thing don't stop with just George Floyd, Martin Luther King, and Rosa Parks. This go all the way back from the beginning of time. And this is where they hate you coming, is that they are the ones that should be asking the question, why do they hate? Why do they hate other races? Why?
Right. So what?
We just
throwing it out there. You're not white. I'm not white. But you know, we just throwing it out there. I did a little research on it, and I'm going to share some of that. I've shared some of it already of why this thing occurs. Back to what you were mentioning about the laws. The U.S. Had a set of rules based on the concept that enslaved persons were property, right? That means that's government, right? Inherent in the institution mm-hmm. was certain social controls when slavers amplified with laws to protect not only the property but also the property owner from danger of slave violence. So they recognized that these people wanted to be free and would fight for their freedom, right? So there's mm-hmm. a reason. That's why they fear. This is a sign that you fear somebody, because you're setting up institutions and laws and designed, right, to protect property owners from the danger of slave violence, which is ludicrous, because if your institution is perpetuating the thing that causes the violence, how is your laws going to stop that? I'm gonna put a law in there against murder, right? But I'm gonna continue to murder these people, but I don't want them to murder me. I'm gonna set a law up so they can't murder me, but I'm gonna continue to murder them. I'm gonna continue to rape them. I'm gonna continue to force them, you know, sell their children, rape their wives, and the men and women and children. Mm-hmm. That doesn't make sense. That's ludicrous, and that's insanity. Then they had the black codes, right? You mentioned that after they freed the slaves. Black codes and laws enacted in the United States of the former Confederacy in the American Civil War that intended to assure the continuance of white supremacy. It was enacted in 1865, and in 1866, the laws were designed to replace the social controls of slavery. So basically, they just enslaved you in another way. They enslaved black people in another way. So, all right. So,
exactly.
Right. So, like you were saying, black codes were intended to secure a steady supply of labor, which is a slave, right? We know that, right? So mm-hmm. the spirit of the slave codes, black codes, Jim Crow in 1887, have been handed down, perpetuated, assimilated into white American culture, attitude, ideology, branches of government, and the culture of law enforcement. They say Jim Crow was finally done away with the passing of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. But you cannot legislate hatred. You understand? You can't because that's the engine for all of this nonsense.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's what we're dealing with right now.
Right. Like you said about the interracial marriage, that was prohibited because whites knew the power of dominant African genetics. They said one drop of black blood, and no matter how white you appear, you were still a nigga. They feared being genetically conquered, but it didn't stop them from raping black folks. Now, go figure that. Huh?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Instead of freeing the slave captives, right, and respecting them as human beings as a way of not inciting slaves to revolt, their delusion of supremacy, greed, and lust for control motivated them to perpetuate the very conditions they feared. They say
mm-hmm.
insanity
yeah.
is doing the same thing and expecting a different result. That's exactly what that is. They had these things called slave patrols. They called them original police, slave patrols, and slave catchers. That's indicative of enslaved people's constant rejection and attack on their white enslavers. Violence was and is the tool used to control the rebellious slave, the unruly slave, and the obedient slave. It is designed and utilized to preserve white supremacy dominant and instill fear in the slave community, right? Here we see white folks have always been fearful of slave revolts, resistance, and uprising. Nat Turner was hardly the only slave that led a revolt against the white oppressors and captors. Such resistance ended in death of any white oppressors or captors. Violence and death will instill fear in anyone, even the brutal, sadistic, murderous, raping, powerful, and authoritative slave masters. A defiant, resistant slave is a threat to the power and authority of white supremacy. The resistant slave is a threat to white life, which is far more precious than black life. A rebellious black person is perceived as crazy and out of control, mad in the mind of a demon, of an animal that needs to be put down. Imagine that legacy of degradation being handed down to generations of white folks like a Christmas story. And there you have it, a fabricated real-life boogeyman fabricated by the real-life boogeyman. You understand what I'm saying? You said they reversed it. They flipped the script. That's exactly what happened. When the black man defends himself against the tyranny of white supremacy and authoritarianism, he is demonized and villainized. He is not perceived as a good boy. Boy is another metaphor for oppression. It represents the perception of a man never reaching adulthood, full physical power, and developing leadership and protective capacities. A boy is a dependent individual who is perceived as less than a man. Only a self-blinded fool can look at a man and perceive him to be a boy.
Exactly.
If blacks are perceived as subhuman, ignorant, thieving, weak, but dangerous by white people, whites will have no problem keeping or putting black people down like the lowly mad dogs some whites perceive that they are. That's what you said. A case in point, right? In Georgia, right? You probably remember this case in 2020, a jogger, Ahmaud Arbery, unarmed black man, was hunted and murdered because three white men accused him of stealing something out of a home that was open and under construction. He was shot with a shotgun at close range three times. I saw the video, right? The father and son duo were not placed in handcuffs upon arrival of the police at the scene. Try that. Try gunning down two white folks when the police get there and see what happens to you, right? This was lynching by civilians, right? Just another murder, right? Like that of George Floyd was lynching by law enforcement. They had no fear of committing these heinous acts. No fear. Black people have been fighting for their lives since they encountered their enslavers. And they have been demonized every time they stood up to exercise their protective capacity. What is going on here? Now I'm trying to put myself in a white man's place, but you know, and I'm not saying all white people hate black people either, but I'm saying the ones that do. I'm trying to say, what in the world you hate?
Basically, you spoke on it, like you said, all white people, because you had some white people that was working along with the Underground Railroad slavery with Harriet Tubman and them that was help get the slaves free. So you did have some white people that died along with black people. But when you look at the institution of slavery, that's still embedded in the minds and it's still in their blood and their thinking, because that's where the white privilege come in at. When white people do something, is that, you know, the same problem. They did a thing on TV today where they were showing where they had this black guy dress up and go steal something out of the car in front of these people. And then soon they seen the black guy, they ran and chased after him. But the white guy did it, the same thing, and had the hoodie on. They seen he was white, they let him go. They said, oh, he just stole him, but they didn't chase after him. See, that's what you call white privilege, white supremacists. And that thing is deeply embedded in our modern-day society from all the way back from the beginning of slavery, from when they feel like we're still their property, even though they might have took the chains off, but the chains are still is embedded in the system. It's a systematic chain. And this is why you got mass incarceration of black and brown people, and they want to know why. You can't tell me that all black and brown people are committing all these crimes. There's a lot of white people that are committing crimes, but you don't hear about it because that's part of the institution of white supremacists.
Hmm.
Now,
about...
until we deal with this deep-rooted white supremacists and they pass, I'm not talking about, no, just talking about they pass laws for hate crimes and discrimination, that's the only way we're going to be able to see a change until the black man stand up and start policing his own community. You know what I mean? Start policing the police. They got a group out called We Ain't Fucking Around, right? God forgive me, but that's the name of the group. I think Master, this guy named Master J, Grandmaster
NFAC. NFAC.
Right. We Ain't Fucking Around, right? And them brothers, man, it's like they see them and they call them terrorists. They call them, you know, every kind of name, but the right name. But when you got people like the Klans and the Boogie Boys, the Proud Boys, they don't even call them terrorists. But when they went in that White House and tore that White House up, they still didn't want to call them terrorists. They call them insurrectionists, but they terrorists. But when you got a group of black men, you couldn't hear it better from Louis Farrakhan. We need to start protecting our own self. When the Panthers came out and started protecting their own self, then you see the change, right? But this thing is so deeply, America had more black men and women than any country in the world. This is why the conversation we have in Dave Carton is these institutions, because if a lot of those politicians are part of the Klan. You know what I'm saying? If you look at the Trump organization.
Funny you should say that. But I'll get to that later on in the show. We're going, but I mean, like,
yeah.
I mean, like, you know, at one time, listen, at one time, this whole country was committing a crime, right? They were enslaving people, right? Murdering, torturing, raping people, right? Forcing them to work, right? So at one time, this whole thing was nothing but a crime, you know, and I'm not saying they're not committing crimes right now, but we're not going to get into that because that's another show. But this bad blood and reprobate thinking appears to have seeped, like you said, into all branches of government, quasi-military organizations and communities, families and individuals becoming systemic, be it expressed in law, application of the law, or socially. The outcome rarely favored the black man. White fear appears to be expressed through hate, disenfranchisement, and violence. White fear and hate appears to have its origin in white supremacy and the horrors of slavery. After all, who would enslave, torture, rape, and murder someone they loved and respected? People are more likely to kill things they fear. For example, police officers sometimes assault and murder simply because they feared for their life. No evidence of a life-threatening anything. Just I was scared. He scared me. I thought I saw a putty cat. Somehow, that is understood and accepted. It should be unacceptable. Who would not expect someone they enslaved, tortured, raped, and murdered not to retaliate or resist? That is why they formed the slave patrols and slave catchers in the first place. White hate groups appear to simply be an extension, an expression of white supremacy. I would find it difficult to sleep on a plantation where I just beat the hell out of a man, raped him, raped his woman, and or his child, sold his child, among forcing them to cower and work like beasts of burden. Most white people didn't own slaves, they said, right? Yet they adopted the same attitude toward black people. It had to come from somewhere. Slave rebellions were not uncommon, and the possibility of uprisings was a constant source of anxiety in the American colonies. That's fear, right? Document. This is from Britannica. They say slave rebellions were not unknown, and it was a constant source of anxiety. Later, the United States with United States with large slave populations like Virginia, had, what's it, 1,418 slaves were convicted of crimes. 91 of the convictions were for insurrection, and 346 were for murder. In Virginia, these slaves were convicted, right? So enslaved persons also ran away, but we got 346 were convicted of murder, 91 for insurrection. In the British possessions in the New World, the settlers were free to basically do what they want to do, see what they see fit to deal with the slave, which is basically talking about the level of violence they would be using, you know, or torture or whatever kind of nonsense or insanity they use to control people. Nat Turner, who in 1831 led, they said, the only effective slave rebellion in U.S. history. I don't know what that's supposed to mean. All slave codes, however, had certain provisions common. In common, all of them, the color line was firmly drawn. This one for Kent Britannica. And any amount of African heritage established the race of a person as black, with little regard as to whether the person was a slave or free. The status of offspring followed that of the mother, so that the child of a free father and an enslaved mother was a slave. The provision is reflected in the Virginia Slave Code from December 1662. That basically means we're going to get all of y'all, because you got to come in here through a woman. So they're doing what they want to do anyway. I don't even know why they had to make a law, but they're making all these laws up saying, hey, you, when you have a child, it's my slave. Slaves had few legal rights in their court. Testimony was inadmissible in any litigation involving whites. You hear that? They could make no contract, nor could they own property, even if it's attacked. They could not strike a white person. So they could not assemble unless a white person was present. They could not own firearms. They could not be taught to read or write, nor could they transmit or possess inflammatory literature. They were not permitted to marry. What do you mean, inflammatory literature? You know what that is? That's anything that speaks to you being a free slave. They call that inflammatory literature. Black Panthers, some of the literature the Black Panthers might have had put out. And some other brothers today is putting out some literature. They might consider it as inflammatory because they just speaking the raw truth, the facts. So, but for provocative thought, now they bug your house, listen to your conversations, or send someone who looks like you to infiltrate your organization. That is fear. So we got hatred and we got fear. Fear may generate hatred. Hatred might generate fear. It's like these things feed on each other. Anyway, from Britannica, obedience to slave code was exacted in a variety of ways. Such punishments as whipping, branding, and imprisonment were commonly used. Damn. That sound familiar to anybody? Is that being used today? Whipping? Well, they're not branding people, but you're sure going to end up with some marks on you after they finish with you, right? And imprisonment. Well, we know who's disproportionately being incarcerated. And it's not because they're committing all these crimes. It's not that, just that. Some people are just not making it to jail. Some enslaved persons, especially those who committed violence against whites, were killed. Although slaves' value to their owners as labor discouraged the practice. Look at that. That's a very inhumane statement. I'm not going to kill him because I'm making money. This Negro makes me a lot of money. That's why I'm not going to. Now his life is this is crazy. This is madness. They had in Virginia, in the Grand Assembly, they said, if any slave resists his master, other by his master's order correcting him, and by the extremity of the correction should chance to die, that his death shall not be accounted a felony. And basically, the person who punished him will be acquitted from the molestation. So this attitude about doing things to black people is why I'm mentioning this, and people being acquitted, not being held accountable, is it's been around for a long time, and it seems to have seeped into the foundation of this country. There appears to have been a theme to control and oppress black people in America. No matter, no matter how harsh, white America had made life for them. Isn't that like torturing somebody and expecting them not to yell out, move, resist, or defend themselves against the assault? You see a lot of that going on. It's like, what's wrong with y'all? It's, like, the message is loud and clear. No slave shall resist a white man, for the penalty shall be death. And nobody is going to jail for it. Imagine that ideology floating around in somebody's head today. Today, 65% of law enforcement is white. It's safe to say it began as an all-white force. Because you know good and well they ain't sending no black man who's not a man, right, in their eyes to correct a white man. Slave codes were codes to justify enslaving the black man and force him to be obedient and subservient to the tyranny of white supremacy and domination. White folks are still being acquitted of crimes perpetrated on blacks. Rodney King may have gotten a break compared to the beating some of the resistant or disobedient slaves received. The practice of agents of law enforcement brutally assaulting and murdering of a black person is no new concept. The videotaping of the crime is. If any slave exists, it is viewed as aggression or a threat. Here, we have the classic scenario where a man fighting for his life is his freedom from the tyranny of the white captor and slaver is viewed as a threat. He is resisting his master. The reality is the slave is supposed to resist his master and the condition of slavery and tyranny. By some twisted form of thinking, these monsters refuse to see the error of the truth, the error and the truth. This reminds me of the times Eric Garner was choked to death because he was selling loose cigarettes. George Floyd trying to breathe as a madman placed his knee on his neck, choking him to death. Another man who officers kept telling to stop resisting while a German shepherd chewed a portion of his leg off. The expectation to stop resisting is unreal and the consequence is extreme and inhumane, the same now as it is then, as it was then. Basically, to acquit a white man for killing a slave means a slave's life isn't worth a wooden nickel, and no white man is going to be punished for killing a slave. Remember, white men have long been the symbol of authority in America. Black people were something they owned, something they could do as they wished with. Still a familiar theme today. So this stuff is just showing up in a different way now than it did back then. Because back then they write it in the law, and you know now they finagle it. Slave codes were not always strictly enforced, but whenever any signs of unrest were detected, the appropriate machinery or state would be alerted, and the laws more strictly enforced. Kidding? How come? You know, why all the hate? I'm not, like, what do you fear? What are you fearing? You fearing retribution? Because that's the only way I could see why you hate, because you fear, they've learned to fear the slave, because the slave fought all the time. He fought on the ships. He fought on the shore. He fought on the plantation. And he continued, the descendants continued to fight up until this day. All right? The fight never stopped. That sounds exactly what happens on the street and in the court today. Blacks or unruly slaves, descendants of the slaves, are but an extension of the past in the minds of some. Resisting their master is relative to resisting law enforcement or authority. Any slave uprising will be met with a great force of violence. Notice the difference between how Capitol Police responded. Mark talked about that, how they responded to the white Capitol rioters and the Black Lives Matter protesters were met with military force. A large gathering of slaves was considered a threat. A large gathering of black folks is still considered a threat. So this, all of this treatment that we're getting is all has its roots in this whole slavery, white supremacy concept and history. This racist ideology and attitude has been handed down and perpetuated before the slave patrols. Here we observe that the recipe for a slave resisting a master or overseer or mistress is violence. If that slave should die, that death should not be accounted a felony and the master shall be acquitted. They don't give two nothing about you. Because it cannot or will not be presumed that he planned to kill or destroy his own property. Isn't that psychotic? Again, basically, he could do what he wants to a slave, his slave. That is what we call legislating crime, to deny the existence of a crime. Still happening today. The monsters that kidnapped, tortured, and murdered Emmett Till in 1955 were found not guilty, and it was a well-known fact that they murdered him. Recently, a white woman admitted her lie led to the death of Emmett Till, yet no one pressed charges against her. Someone brought it to my attention. How come they went after Bill Cosby for some old stuff? Police are acquitted frequently if they make it to court. Remember, the police attacking Rodney King in 1991 and the unbelievable verdict, acquitted. Then came the riots. King suffered skull fractures, permanent brain damage, and broken bones during the vicious attack, which was captured on video. King, who was on parole for robbery at the time, led police on a high-speed chase before the incident. This is from the Independent. Excuse me. He was later released without charge. Four white LAPD officers, including one sergeant, were subsequently charged with the assault and use of excessive force. The 17 officers who were reported to have stood by and watched were never indicted. Now, what is a police officer's job when you have a person in custody? The safety of that person, right? But almost a year later, on April 29th, 1992, the police officers were acquitted, sparking the worst riots back then in U.S. history, right? So, Houston, we have a problem. From PBS News, the FBI warned a white supremacist in law enforcement 10 years ago. The FBI warned of the potential consequences, including bias of white supremacist groups infiltrating local and state law enforcement, indicating it was a significant threat to national security. If you're worried about slave uprisings, right? You got to start treating people like people. In the 2006 bulletin, the FBI detailed the threat of white nationalists and skinheads infiltrating police in order to disrupt investigations, allow fellow members, and recruit other supremacists. The bulletin was released during a period of scandal for many law enforcement agencies throughout the country, including a neo-Nazi gang formed by members of the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department who harassed black and Latino communities. Wonder why so many black people going to jail, all right? Similar investigations reveal officers and entire agencies with hate group ties to Illinois, Ohio, and Texas. That's from the Independent. That's not me saying that. All right? Look, law enforcement has its roots in slave patrols and slave catchers and slavery. No doubt that the institution and ideology of slavery has had an impact on policing. It looks quite the same today as it did yesterday. They still have dogs, too. Regardless, all the laws, slave masters or agents of the law, assault, regardless of the law, slave masters or agents of the law, assault, murder with little to no fear of consequences or accountability. Which why do you hate people to that extent? Walter, what's that guy named? Walter Scott was running away from this Sagler, and it made him put like, what did he put, 4 bullets in his back, or maybe more? What kind of monster are you? Officer Derek, or ex-officer Derek Chauvin, right? Nonchalant, cavalier attitude while choking the helpless George Floyd, handcuffed behind his back with a knee in his neck, was indicative of how he thought he would not be held accountable for his actions. How much he devalued the life of Floyd and how much he either hated or feared Floyd as a helpless, fearless black man or civilian. He did all that as civilians, slaves, or an impotent crowd watched in anger and in horror. And I had to put fear in that because they were, what, 1, 2, 3, 4. There were 4 guns on the scene. I heard with a 5th officer somewhere on a curb somewhere. So that's actually 5 guns. And I think they clip. They got at least 11 in the clip. I think they got 17. They may have wanted to do something, but the consequences would be too great. Doesn't it sound like the slaves? Some of them might have wanted to be bought, but the consequences were too great for them, for some. There were 5 armed officers on the scene. The buck was fighting for the breath of life and lost to the sadistic brutality of law enforcement. To add salt to injury, Chauvin appeared to be unmoved by his actions. It was just another day and another nigga. I guess I would be fearful of a group of people that I had been sadistically and brutally assaulting, raping, and murdering too. Yeah. I would expect a rebellion and a reckoning from those who have little to no protection from my brutality and inhumanity. And you can see that these black people, these slaves, these captured people fought back, and it created anxiety in the white captors. Same thing now. That's why when you fight back, the level of violence increases. When you resist, the level of violence increases. Sit from CNN. 1,000 on the world protest Floyd's death. In a global display of solidarity. This is not just black people. This is people of the world. Protesters marched in the U.S. for 6 consecutive nights. It was rioting going on. We know that, right? Over the death of George Floyd at the hand of a police officer, their anger over the killing of the unarmed black man has now spread worldwide, they said, right? So I'd say that's just it's just a matter of time before this code of unaccountability causes white supremacy, its supremacy in the United States. It's at least threatening to bring black people together, and it appears that no one wants that. People around the world protesting, expressing their displeasure with the daylight on-video murder of Floyd. The black man is still being subjected to the slave codes. Could it be that after 400 years of inhumane treatment, it is not possible for some white people to value the life of black people? What's going on here? Why do we think, I can't be the only person that's questioning this. Why do you think some white people just, hate black people? Now, anybody who called in, please, I want to remind you to press the number 1 if you want to speak. Your opinion is highly valued and on this show. Please remember, press the number 1 if you want to speak. So, hatred, just like anything, as I said, you're going to hate somebody who can destroy you. And no matter, even if they're destroying you for because you're destroying them, you're going to develop a hate. That's how we have wars. You can see that in any kind of relationship between two groups. And once you the level of violence increases, you develop hatred. You kill somebody close to me. Doesn't matter if that person was a monster or not. You killed them, and now I must kill you. I don't like you. I don't like y'all. You know what I'm saying? You see it with the with gangs. You can see that with countries. You see it with ethnic groups, and you know it just makes things worse when you just treat people bad constantly and don't feel that they even deserve to be treated like a human being. So, as I was saying, they say 3/4 from PBS. They talk about the conditions of antebellum slavery. They said enslaved African Americans could never forget their status as property, no matter how well their owners treated them. See that attitude right there? Never forget who you are, your place. And so, we have a caller. Welcome to
hey,
Survive the
doing,
Thought.
Paul?
All right, what's up, Mr.
Hey. Hey, how you feeling?
All right.
The topic you have tonight has been a long-standing question. Why do they hate us? You know, I don't care what avenue you go down, whether it be educationally, socially, politically, or consciously, you know, that question has been a question that we've been asking. And my question is, who cares? We got to look at what we have to do. Anything we do, anything we put our hearts to in building a nation within a nation, they're going to have some type of negative response. History tells you that. The previous caller that you had, he said one statement that resonated with me, that the black man is the original man. That's why the other culture had deleted us from history, world history, not just American history, world history, because you have to remember, we raised them. We taught them how to cook. We taught them how to clothe themselves. We taught them about medicine, sanitation, what have you. And it's in their DNA. It has been proven. If you look at their history, what did they contribute? What is their contribution to humanity? War, colonialism, human trafficking. And when I talk about human trafficking, I'm talking about human trafficking of the African to the Americas, which we now are African Americans, Black Americans, Afro Americans, colored, Negro, whatever label you will put upon us for our history in America. So we spend too much time trying to figure out why do they hate us, where we should be spending our energy on how can we rebuild, how can we build, how can we build our communities, how can we become independent, self-sufficient. And they'll never, I won't say never, it's not a good word. Right now, I said on my show Tuesday, that verdict, Chauvin was a sacrificial lamb. It was a financial verdict. Can you imagine if he was found not guilty, what would happen in May in every city, mid-city, and black suburbia in this country. They was already preparing for that, all the stones surrounding the city, blowing up the businesses. We would have made the riots of the late 60s look like child play. And my response to all that is he was a sacrificial lamb. He got busted. He got caught on video. So they had no other choice. They had no other choice. It wasn't really justice for black folks. It was just like, hey, you know, here's a bone. Now leave us alone. You got your little justice for now. It's just less than 2 miles from the courthouse. A 20-year-old kid got shot last week. Right. And I said on my show on Tuesday, look, that blue wall is something else. It's going to be some pushback. And since the verdict, there have been four major police shootings in this country. Each day. And then we got to look at it, too. You know, we're still in slavery. We might not be in physical slavery, but we're in the financial slavery, mental slavery, emotional slavery. And I mean, the thought of assimilation. And figure that white supremacy, the educational system, political system, and any other system that you want to discuss support white supremacy. And what do I think about white folks becoming involved? I'm not impressed. Because tomorrow, when everything is quiet down, you go back to your white privilege. You go back to your white privilege. You can hide in your homes. You can hide in your doors. So it does not impress me because we have white folks saying, oh, this is a tragedy. Yeah, you may think that, but you still have your white privilege. You still have your thought process. You still have means to build. So that's my comment of that. They're going to continue to hate us. Even if they support us, they still have stereotypes which come out of hatred about black folks in America. And sometimes we support those same stereotypes. Look at our average black community in America. Look how our families are living. Look at the unemployment rate of black men. Look at the high dropout rate in 2021. There still is a high percentage of high dropout rate of black males. Look at the killing of black males by black males. Gun violence. So, and when you look at all of this syndrome, and then we can't even leave out media and media for our own by other cultures that don't look like us. Look at the images they put forth. If I didn't know any black person, and all I knew was the TV, I'll swear we were drug dealers, woman beaters, our children haters.
But you know what? That's what the media is portraying. But if you know the history of this country, you know that These white folks were women beaters, rapers of men, women, and children, murderers, torturers, enslavers. What do you call that?
Well, they control, what's the new concept media has been saying for the last 5 years? Controlling the narrative. When you are owners of media, when you are the dominant culture in the political and the criminal justice system and the educational system, you control the narrative. You control policy. You control law. You can control the thinking process of the citizens of the United States, which they don't feel that we are citizens of the United States. But if we are citizens of the United States, why do we need an amendment called the Equal Rights Amendment? Why do we need the Voters' Rights Act? Well, it got to be reviewed every 25 years. So they control the narrative, and yes, like I said before, if you look at their history from ancient time to present, that has been their contribution to humanity.
Talking about European civilization, right? So-called civilization, right? That contribution has been basically war.
Yes, colonialism, human trafficking, slavery. There was slavery in England before there was slavery in America. There was slavery in England before America was really established. Before the so-called independent war, American Revolution. So that is their contribution. And we have to stop and look at ourselves and say, look, hey, let's look at this whole assimilation and integration philosophy that have been placed upon us. Do we really want to be like them? Do we really want to beg them for rights as citizens or as Marcus Garvey and Elijah Muhammad said, do for self? Let's focus on us. We know the deal. And we got to really get into our whole historical development, our whole history in America. And like the gentleman said earlier, our history just didn't start slavery. It started in ancient time. Thousands and thousands and thousands and dynasties ago. You know, but if we focus on blacks in America, we got to look at the strategies that we've been following for the past 100 years. It has not been working. And we continue. Well, what's that definition of insanity? Doing the same thing and thinking there's going to be different results?
Right.
And that's what we're doing. Marching, begging the courts. Like Malcolm said, how can you go to an individual that been enslaving you and ask them for freedom? You think they're going to give you freedom? You think they're going to give you justice? You think they're going to give you independence? If the shoe was on the other foot?
It seems like the brothers from a long time ago, they wasn't asking. That's what I'm trying to say here tonight. Over, you know, they got over 240-something documented slave uprisings of, including slaves of people. They wasn't asking. They weren't asking for freedom.
They were trying to get theirs.
Right.
They were trying to go for theirs.
Right.
And we be, but that's another thing. And when it comes down to education, how many black folks know this? How many black folks, black children, are taught this in their classrooms that have a teacher that looks like them? How many black folks know this? How many black folks know that if they really go down their ancestor line, they come from royalty, they come from development civilization, and they would don't let me go down to the science. Don't let me go down that road. We have built this country, and another thing, why do they hate us? Well, they think we're inferior. But in heart, they're afraid of us once we get the tools that are necessary to build. They know what we've become. So they use, like your brother said, they use religion. They use education to think that we are inferior, to think that, hey, we have to come to you for our justice and freedom and equality.
Right, but that's a lie. They know it's a lie.
Yeah, well, we should be saying, hey, yo, you keep your justice, you keep your freedom, and shove it where the sun don't shine. We'll work on us. Just leave us alone. Like I heard, I read today that we need to patrol our own communities. We need to have our own curriculum. I have teachers on my show. Matter of fact, I have a teacher on next Tuesday, Black Earth America. And every time I get an educator on my show, I ask them, why haven't you made the curriculum more Afrocentric? Why haven't you influenced our kids to become entrepreneurs? Why haven't you influenced our kids to become part of STEM? Science, technology, engineering, mathematics. Yeah. Why are you still influencing our children with this white supremacist curriculum?
And what he said?
Well, it takes a while. Our curriculum is funded by the federals, by the feds. Okay, well, all these black principals we have now, all these black teachers, with all these black superintendents of education, with all these black commissioners of education, you mean to tell me y'all can have a black educational conference and say, hey, look, let's get away from this. Let's start building our own school. Let's start having our own curriculums. Let's institute an Afrocentric curriculum from kindergarten. I'm not talking about high school or I'm talking about pre-K all the way up. You mean to tell me with all and other clauses said, you know, like Carter T. Woodson and re-education of the Negro, all you got to do, take out a Negro, put in African-American, and take out 1945 and put in 20,021, hey, you have it. You just change the words, and you have the reason. When you go to the white institution, like I did, and like you did, you go to these white institutions, they teach you their Eurocentric strategy and philosophy, and you take the philosophy and strategy and culture and bring it back to your community. We only teach, instead of doing our own research, developing our own strategies, develop our own career, and it starts there. It begins right there. So it's a whole framework of why do they hate us.
I think it's not that deep at all why they hate us. That's what I was just talking about. They hate us because they have taught to hate us, number one. Number two, like you said, they want to be superior to us. So in their minds, they're superior. therefore you are subhuman. So if you're a subhuman, I don't have to treat you with the same respect that I treat a person on my level. You understand what I'm saying? Just like we don't have the same respect for a roach. We see a roach, what we do to it?
Exterminate
them, right? Oh, roaches, so the only difference is they benefit from our labor. So they don't want to just, they'd be cutting their own throats just to kill all of us at a certain point. Now, we might be reaching that point where they don't need us no more. You understand what I'm saying right now? But that's another show. But, yeah, the whole thing, they hate you because from what I've been reading, we've been killing them in defense of ourselves, and they hate you for defending yourself and causing them to feel pain. So that hate chance was handed down. Centuries and centuries of hate and that fear. Oh, watch them. They'll kill you if you do this. You watch them. Because, even though all the little slave things we used to see coming up, me and you, right? It was all that. You see the slaves on the thing, he was all, oh, yes, sir, Mr. Boss Man, yes, sir. All right. Right? You never seen like you said, because who controls Hollywood, right? You see the slave just smashing the plantation owners. I'm out of here. And no matter of fact, before I go, I'm killing anybody up in this. You don't see that. What movie did that?
I haven't seen.
All right.
I haven't.
So, but the reality is, hey, we were a threat to them even in our worst condition. We were still fighting. We were warriors. We came as warriors, and we remained warriors when we were here. So they fought the whole time on those ships. They fought here in America. They fought the whole time, but they never, that's like you say, controlling the narrative. They never let that narrative out, because the impression we're getting through the media, as you say, is that, hey, these guys were subdued. And what's the guy named Kunta Kinte? He's one of the few that was trying to run away. And then we got Harry Tubman was all snatching people off the plantations. You know what I'm saying? When, like, hey, they were fighting the whole time. The whole time.
Right. Especially for Jim.
Yeah, it was rumbling, man. Yeah, man. It was rumbling the whole time, man. Against all odds. The odds was against them. They was running, joining the Indians, running down Mexico, and just killing up folks that was killing and raping them. When they did it, it was bad.
You know, mm-hmm.
When they did it, it was bad.
And,
but what's happening to them,
and,
no problem.
And you know what, Carl? I don't condone violence. You know, I'm really don't. I'm really anti-violence, you know. I believe in more so boycotts. I think that's the strategy. I'm going somewhere with this. The reason why I select boycott, let's look at Dr. King. That's how Dr. King got big. He had that bus boycott. You know what Dr. King's chapter 2 should have been? Building a black bus company. He was on that momentum. Instead of listening to some advisors, let's go down. It's great. We saw the economic impact of black folks right there. If we just want to take a period out of history, two periods out of history, that boycott and the segregation era, which I still believe we have a little semi-segregation going on today, but that segregation, we had an economic boycott. And the way you subdue a culture, hit them in the pocket, especially white boys. Hit them in the pockets. Oh, they'll invite you to the table then.
I'm in agreement with that, Kenny. I agree with you.
And then when you look at the violence, when you take that, how many in history, how many black folks, I say with the exception of the riots in the 60s, killing white folks. We turn guns on ourselves.
Yeah, a lot of black folks kill the black. That's why I don't look at. That's why I really cringe at with people like the NFAC. You really think? Hey, I got some stuff. Well, that's an issue for another show. Who the hell is Grandmaster Jay? And I can say research on that fella. You'd be surprised who this guy is. Do you think toting your guns in front of the National Guard, the state police, the local police gonna bring you any kind of justice? Let's look at it. You talk about, all right, you got, let's say you got 100 people.
What happened the last time that happened, Kenny? Kenny, remember the last time somebody did that? In history, in our history, the last time somebody, the Black Panthers, right?
Yeah, but they used it. But the difference between the Black Panthers versus NFAC, them brothers, back in the 60s, backed it up. They had some that one. Matter of fact, if it wasn't for the Black Panthers, look it up. This is fact to your audience. If it wasn't for the Black Panthers, there would be no SWAT today.
That's right.
SWAT.
That's what
there
happened.
There would be no SWAT.
Right. That's what happened. That's what I was talking about. Hey, we got 3 more minutes left. Kenny, I'm just going to say this here. George Floyd, violence would have helped him. Ain't no boycotting or protesting would have helped that man get off his neck. We needed violence in order to, as an intervention, to save that man's life. But it wasn't possible because there were other lives at stake.
You got to remember, they got more guns than we do. Today, they didn't have it in the 60s. Today, if you're labeled as a terrorist, you go to a whole different prison.
That's right.
Now you become, they don't catch political prisoners. We still got some political prisoners that are still alive in the state of California that were from the BLA and the Black Panther Party.
Years or something.
Yeah. So you don't want to be labeled as a terrorist. You don't want, and sometimes, Carlton, when you're in the war, I said this last week, there's a war against the black man in America. There's always been a war against the black man in America.
30 seconds,
and when
Kenny.
You're in the war, when you're in the war, there's going to be some passion. Okay, Carlton, thank you for letting me talk, and good topic tonight and every day. I wish Elizabeth would have the heart to express their comments, you know. But I hope they learned something.
Yeah. I appreciate you calling in, Kenny, Mark, and everybody who listened in tonight. I want to thank everybody. I want to thank Retalk Productions, Mr. Kenny Jones again, Blog Talk Radio, and the creator. Until next week, y'all. Peace out.
Be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in 4 parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from the Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run. or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Detroit from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on the rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.